caring. Why isn't God doing something? You know, is God falling asleep? Is God, are you seeing what's happening here? I tell you what, Habakkuk could be written today. How many of you have asked that question or know people who've asked that question? God, look what's happening here. You know, sometimes it takes an assassination attempt to get people's attention a little bit. Scary stuff in our society today that it's come to that. Somebody doesn't like the president, they just shoot him. It's just the violence, the wickedness. And you know what? I can't tell you how many people talk to say, man, Pastor, I've been praying, but I don't know. God, where's God? What's God doing? I mean, look what he's let go. So I don't think it's much different for Habakkuk. That's what he's saying. Now, he's a prophet of God. I understand that. But he saw the revival under Josiah. And now he's to the point that the world is full, or Israel, Judah, is full of injustice. And again, he's asked why he's permitted to see iniquity on every hand and violence and strife going unchecked. You know, what troubles the prophet is seeing that the Lord seems to look on these heartbreaking conditions with an indifference. The silence of God in human affairs, then as now, has ever been difficult to understand. But let me tell you something, because God doesn't deal with America, because God doesn't deal with your situation, somebody's wronged you and God doesn't pour judgment down upon them, does not mean that there's not an answer and that God's divine wisdom is incapable of coping with the situation. For God has an all-seeing eye and everything is under the control of his mighty hand. But in the meantime, though, he's beginning to describe it. How long shall I cry in verse 2? And thou wilt not hear. Even cry unto thee of violence, and thou wilt not save. I mean, God, it's getting violent down here. It's getting wicked down here. People are going crazy down here. Why dost thou show me iniquity and cause me to behold grievance? For spoiling and violence are before me, and they are they that raise up strife and contention. The law is slacked, and judgment doth never go forth. For the wicked do compass about the righteous, therefore wrong judgment proceedeth. Boy, I tell you what, if you follow this closely, you'd get a picture of America today. Our court systems, I tell you that court case with President Trump was absurd. I guarantee you those jury members were threatened. Because they let out the names of all the jury members. Everybody knew him. You don't think they got paid off? To find him guilty on 34 accounts when they weren't even, it was a misdemeanor 8 years ago? Okay, did he do some things immoral and wrong? Sure he did. But what politician hasn't? And to see the courts and the ruling that they found him guilty on 34 accounts, all guilty. That's a corrupt court. But it's going on and on. It's even farther and more widespread than what we even imagine. It's almost scary if you're a conservative to go to court anymore. That's what's taking place in his day. Because of the unrighteous judges, the law, it meant nothing. And since the forms of judgment were corrupted, both life and liberty were insecure. Justice could not prevail because the wicked knew how to hem the righteous in on all sides so that he could not receive his due. I mean, they just, the wicked have a way of making things happen that they always get their way. It doesn't matter. It seems like now we've got them. There's no way they can get out of this. And they do. That's what was taking place in Bangs. So I think honestly, if your head is not completely in the sand, you do watch some news and listen to what's happened in the world, you could say, wow, I can relate to what Habakkuk's going through. I mean, the judges, they were all corrupt. You couldn't get a fair trial if you tried to. And unrighteousness was just being rewarded. It was just going, things were going crazy. And violence, it was out of control. Everything was there. I mean, justice could not prevail because of the wicked. And they ensnared the righteous by fraud, and the ungodly perverted all right and honesty. And now here's the kicker Habakkuk sees. And because God didn't punish them immediately, men thought they could get away with their sin without any consequences. I see that today, folks. God's not pouring judgment down upon some of these politicians that are as wicked as the day is long. And as long as God's not judging them, guess what? They're just going to keep right on doing it. Why? Because there's no consequences. This is what Habakkuk's seeing. And so as a prophet, he's discouraged. Now remember, what's he expecting? He's expecting revival. He saw Judah at its finest under Josiah. I mean, he tore down the idols and all the stuff he did, and revival came, and Israel was the best it had been since David's day. And it was going really well. But it didn't take long, and it's reverted back. Wait till in a couple, or when I get done with 1 Corinthians, we're going to take a look back at 2 Kings chapter 15, and Asa had revival. Remember there, I talked about this last week on the Sunday morning. There was no teaching priests. They didn't treat God as the true God, and there was no law. And God brought judgment down upon Israel, wrath. And Asa came in and cleaned it all up. And everything was wonderful. They saw God's blessing, and it took just a few years. And guess what? They were back right where they started from. And that's where Habakkuk's at. Israel's back. He saw the bad. Then he saw the really good. Now the bad's back. And he wants to see the really good. And he wants to see God blessing. He wants to see the righteous flourish and not the wicked. He doesn't want to see the violence. That's what he's saying in verses 1 through 4. God, how long do I have to cry unto you? How long do I have to try to wake you up, God? Have you fallen asleep? God, do you see what's going on here? This isn't the Judah. This isn't the Judah we want. This isn't the Judah you want. Why are you letting these people get away with this for so much? Why are you doing nothing? Basically, that's what he's asking in verses 1 through 4. Now, in verses 5 through 13, Habakkuk expected the Lord to intervene graciously. And what he wanted was to send revival once again, like in Josiah's day. God, just send revival. I mean, snare the wicked, destroy them, throw fire down from heaven. I don't care what you do, get rid of the wicked. Let's go back to the days it was. Why aren't you doing anything, God? And in verses 5 through 13, God says, I am doing something, Habakkuk. I am doing something. When God answered Habakkuk, this is what he said. I'm going to send the Babylonian nation to discourage my people. They're going to go into captivity. You know, again, in verse 6, for lo, I raise up the Chaldeans, or Babylon, that bitter and hasty nation which marched through the breadth of the land and to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. They are terrible and dreadful. He's describing Babylon. Their judgment, their dignity shall proceed of themselves. It's all about them. Their horses are swifter than leopards and more fierce than wolves. The horsemen shall spread themselves, and their horsemen shall come from far, and they shall fly as an eagle and haste us to eat. They'll take what they want to eat, and there's nobody that's going to stop them. They shall come all violence. Their faces shall sup up as the east wind, and they shall gather. God said, Habakkuk, I'm not asleep. I am doing something. I'm raising up a nation that's going to come in and give Israel or Judah exactly what they deserve. So God did answer him, and he raised up the Babylonian nation. And again, that raised a second dilemma for Habakkuk. We won't get into that until chapter 2, but the second dilemma was how could you use somebody who's more wicked than us to punish us? That's the dilemma he gets in chapter 2. But God wants him to know that I'm not asleep. I'm wide awake. I see everything that's going up, and I'm dealing with it because I'm raising up Babylon. And he did. It was Babylon that came in and destroyed Assyria and Nineveh. Remember that? And that's, we have the writings of the book of Nahum and the whole story of it. And now Babylon comes in and goes in and destroys Egypt. I mean, they are boom. They are the nation. They are the most powerful, dreadful nation on the earth. Now, they've just risen up. Nineveh was like that, and Assyria was like that for hundreds of years. They took advantage. Now, all of a sudden, God raises up Nebuchadnezzar and his dad and him, and they raise up this great city of Babylon, and you've heard about it, and we Daniel covers it quite a bit because that's where he was with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And this great city's being raised. God said, Habakkuk, I am doing something. I'm raising up a city, and I'm raising up an army, a great, powerful army that's going to come in, and they're going to give Judah exactly what it is. But that's not the answer Habakkuk wanted. He wanted revival. But you know what? You pray, but God doesn't always give us the answer we want, does he? But God is always right. Boy, I could say that until I'm in my face, and Christians just don't get it, but God is always right. If God chooses not to bring judgment down upon some of these politicians, God has a perfect plan. And if he comes back and said, and the rapture occurs and he sets up his the tribulation period, they're listen, somewhere they're going to get exactly what they deserve, folks. But I think Christianity is going to get what they deserve too. And so God tells Habakkuk in verses 5 through 15, I'm not asleep. I'm working. I'm raising up an army. He's already there. I've already defeated the Assyrians. And they've defeated the Egyptians. And now they're going to come to Judah and defeat Judah. Well, that's not the answer Habakkuk wanted. You know, again, they have been more wicked than we are. How can you use somebody more wicked than we are? You know, God is far from being unconcerned about the earth's affairs. He knows everything that's going on in this. He knows what's going on in China. He knows what's going on in Ukraine. He knows the real story in Ukraine and Russia. God knows exactly what's taking place. You say, how does he know everything? He's God, folks. Each one of you could go home this afternoon and at the exact same time from wherever you are, make a prayer to God, and God would hear every single one of your prayers. And he even know what you're going to pray before you even pray it. He's going to know what you think even before you think it. We limit God so much because we're finite people. But God knows the affairs of this world, and God was concerned about the affairs of the whole world. And he said, I'm going to deal with Judah. But first, I got to deal with Assyria. Then I got to deal with Egypt. Don't worry. Judah's going to get what they deserved, all the wrath, all the violence, all the corrupt judges, everything that's corrupt, they're going to get what they deserve. But it's going to be in my time and my way. That's what he's trying to let Habakkuk know. Again, we can always be certain that if our hearts are stirred over sin and ungodliness in the world, God is all the more deeply concerned. God addresses Habakkuk and the people of Judah, directing them to look out at the scene of the world among the nations. The Lord points out to them in this passage that events are transpiring among all the surrounding nations. The Assyrian Empire is destroyed. The founding of the Chaldean rule and power in Babylon and their victory over the Egyptians. The power of the Babylon nations will be used of God to chastise Judah. God's at work, folks. He's at works in ways that you don't even understand, but you can see. And so, you know, I sit back in Taiwan and China and Ukraine and Russia. I can see problems. It's not a problem for God. He knows exactly what he's doing, folks. We have to let God be God. That's where Habakkuk was. He said, God, look what's happening in Judah. Corrupt judges, wickedness, violence. I mean, they don't even worship you. Judah's out of control. God said, I know. I'm dealing with it. And they'll get it. But first I got to do this, this, and this in the world scene. Then that nation that I raise up, it's coming. It's coming. It is obvious that Habakkuk ministered at a time when the Chaldeans were coming to force and in the world of politics. And again, we have a threefold picture here of this enemy. Number one, that they're cruel. They are terrible and dreadful. Verse 7, they are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and dignity shall proceed of themselves. They're going to come in and they're going to do a lot of destruction. Now they took some of the best out of Judah and took them there to become their people, like Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach and the young and the wise. And they did leave some of the older people to farm the land and things. But when they came into Israel, they came in and just destroyed it in 586. They destroyed the temple, they demolished it, and they didn't take a huge remnant. There was a bigger remnant of Israelites, northern kingdom, that they'd captured from Assyria in Babylon than there was even from Judah. I mean, they came in, and so we see they came in as a pretty cruel nation. They came in quick. Their horses are swifter than leopards and are more fierce than even evening wolves, and their horsemen shall spread themselves, and their horsemen shall come from afar or from far. We can see that they were cruel, they were quick, and they were impetuous. Verse 9, they shall come all for violence. I mean, they're not coming to be your friend. They're not coming just to say, hey, how you doing? We're taking you over and we're taking you all into captivity. They were coming in to destroy. When they came into a land in Assyria, I mean, they destroyed all of Nineveh. And I think they destroyed most of Nineveh and most of the people, and they did the same thing in Egypt. And that's what the plan is. That God had raised them up because, you know what? Judah had become wicked. And he was going to send them in. These people that God has raised up are dreadful, are the Israel's dreadful adversary. Their own desire is their only law. And it's their only desire is their standard of judgment. There is nothing lacking in their preparation for their military campaigns. Their horses exceed the leopards in swiftness. Their ferocity even surpasses the evening wolves. The Chaldean horsemen are irresistible in their attack, and they swoop down as an eagle that take any prey they choose. That was Judah's sin. And that's going to be Judah's punishment. So he tells Habakkuk, I'm working. I'm working, and I'm raising up a nation. It's going to be a powerful nation. They're going to defeat the Ninevites. They're going to defeat Egyptians. They're going to be the great nation of land, and I'm raising them up, and they're going to come in. Now, God had a perfect plan because Babylon was an amazing city to bring in Israel once again, the northern kingdom and southern kingdom once together in captivity. And then at the end of captivity, Persia would take over, and Cyrus would allow Nehemiah and Esther and all those guys to go back and rebuild the temple and then rebuild the walls in Jerusalem, and they would let them come out of captivity. But Israel need to be punished. Now, it was 70 years, the length of it, because they had forgotten the Sabbath, the seventh year Sabbath, for 490 years. So God was going to leave them in captivity, but it was probably the best situation for Israel that they could have in captivity. But God raised them up. God was at work even when Habakkuk couldn't see it. But I like verse 11. It says, then shall his mind change, and he shall pass over and offend, imputing his power unto his God. You know what that's in reference to? One day, this great city that's going to destroy and take Judah and take him in, one day their king's going to rise up, Nebuchadnezzar, and he's going to walk on the wall. And he's going to say, look what I built. look what I've accomplished. Look at all that I've done. And God's going to smite him with a disease that hits his mind and takes away his mind because he's imputed this power, his success to his God, to himself. Even back then, God said, I'm raising up this nation, Babylon, and they're going to take all the credit for it. And then I'm going to deal with Nebuchadnezzar. I'm going to deal with the king. Now, he didn't go into specifics here, but he's going to go into 7 years where he's just going to be mindless. He's going to act like an animal, and they're going to put him in a cage. But at the end of those 7 years, he's going to come to his senses, and he's going to give glory to God. I would like to see, I don't know, is Nebuchadnezzar saved and in heaven today? Is he going to be in heaven with us? I don't know. That's one of those questions I've written down on my little card. I don't know. He gave God the glory at the end. But God was raising up this great nation to accomplish his purpose, and they weren't even going to give him the glory. He mentions that to Habakkuk. And so I want to get into the rest of it, but it's a great story. Dr. Martin Lloyd-Jones preached a series of messages from Habakkuk shortly after World War II. And I read them. Great stuff. Next week I'm going to give you just a synopsis of what he said. Just so you know going in, now chapter 2, when we get there, it's all about Habakkuk doesn't understand how God could take an ungodly nation like Habakkuk, or like Babylon, and use them to accomplish his purpose. How could God use an unsaved, ungodly nation to fulfill his purpose? That's chapter 2. But for right now, he said, God, have you fallen asleep? God, what are you doing? Look at what's happened in Israel. Do something. Create revival. Bring it back. God said, I'm at work. I'm at work. Don't worry about it. I'm taking care of it. I'm raising up the Chaldeans. They're going to become a great and powerful nation. Now, they're going to take the glory for it. But the only reason they're what they are is because I've allowed them to, and I've given them the right to do it. But I'm going to use them to defeat the Ninevites, and I'm the Syrians, and I'm going to use them to defeat the Egyptians. I'm going to use them to bring judgment down. So Habakkuk, just to let you know, I'm at work. I haven't fallen asleep. And again, I'm going to stop there because I want to pick up Lloyd-Jones next week. But I want to remind you, God's not asleep, folks. Maybe he's preparing us for the tribulation. Then it made me think, I saw that picture today, that still picture where you can see the bullet right past Mr. Trump's head. That bullet was in an inch from shattering his skull. They said they think it was either a wind, gust of wind, or he just turned at the right time. Well, I like what Mr. Trump said. I'm only alive today because of God. Maybe God has something in store. Maybe he's going to do something like that. I don't know what God is, but I want you to know many people, Christians today, are like Habakkuk saying, God. And I remember when America was great. I remember when Christianity was on the rise. I remember when we ran buses and churches were full and Baptist churches and everything was great. I remember those days. But now, because of all the wickedness, what are you doing? God would give you the same answer he gave Habakkuk. Don't worry. I'm at work. I've got a perfect plan. And that's when this all transpires, and it all comes down, You hear me say this 100 times through this because it's the theme of the book. Habakkuk had to come to the point in his life where he said, the just shall live by faith. He had a lot of questions. He questioned God in chapter 1. He questions God in chapter 2. But then he comes to the right conclusion, and it changes his life. And I tell you what, if we as Christians would come to the right conclusion, the just shall live by faith, it would transform the way we worry about politics, the way we worry about what's happening in the world today. That's why I think Habakkuk is so good and so right to preach at this time. It's got a great truth to it. But you have to understand it a little bit better than what you do if you just read it through. But there's some great truths in it, and it compares a lot what happened in Habakkuk's day to our day today. And then we'll, in a couple weeks, we'll come to that great conclusion. The just shall live, and it transformed his life. God never brought revival again. He never saw revival in his time. But he was content with what God did and was doing, because the just shall live by faith. Let's pray. Father, thank you for Habakkuk. This book, studying it weeks and weeks ago, transformed my thinking toward politics and the world. I don't worry anymore, because the just shall live by faith. I know my God's in complete control. Oh, Habakkuk couldn't see it. But God said, I'm busy at work. And he even revealed what he was doing on a national front. God had everything under control. And just as in Habakkuk's day with Babylon, 586 BC, today, 2024, God has everything under control. Oh, we may not see it, but help us not to be like a younger Habakkuk, but an older Habakkuk that says, the just shall live by faith. Help us to apply this book, these principles, to our lives for your honor and your glory. And again, we're going to close the day as we always do with just one.